Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, it seems a little early, and that's because it is a little early to be talking about the 2016 campaign. But for those who are actually thinking about running, it's probably not. They need to be thinking about organization, about fundraising, about all sorts of things, whether they actually want to run. That's kind of an important part of it. And of course, the day after the 2014 midterms, that's going to be on full throttle. So one of the names that has popped up, and Bob Costa of National Review has just done a story on Ted Cruz, the freshman senator from Texas, just elected this past November. And the story is that he is seriously considering this. It's in his inner circle right now, but he's getting a lot of encouragement from a lot of different places. And he's also got the base already fired up in early primary states like South Carolina. We can talk about how this could be a little bit premature since he's only been in the Senate for 4 months. We could obviously do a heck of a lot worse than Ted Cruz as president of the United States. And given his track record so far and his position on most issues from a conservative perspective, it's hard to see who could do a whole lot better, although he'd probably want someone maybe with a little more experience.
Yeah, well, this is, I think, a result of Obama opening the door of a first-term senator running for presidency back in 2008. Obama had been in office for 4 years when he became president. I think what we see in both of those cases is the sense that actually time in politics doesn't really enhance your support. It only erodes it. It kind of, or at least maybe within your state, you become popular. But on the national scene, eventually you take votes and you take stances that somebody doesn't like and you become imperfect. When you are the fresh face on the scene, you are something of a blank slate and people can project what they want onto you. The fact that he is a Cuban-American Latino certainly doesn't hurt. The fact that he is from Texas, a safe red state, certainly doesn't hurt. You look at a whole bunch of figures in the Republican side. Chris Christie with the embrace of Obama back in the 2012 election. Marco Rubio on this immigration bill. There are a lot of folks on the right who have irked the conservative grassroots in one way or another. Rand Paul on immigration as well. All have kind of taken one stance or another that a big chunk of the grassroots doesn't like or is at least wary about. And so Ted Cruz sees an opening, and while it's obviously very early, it seems very clearly he knows he could fit that niche quite well. And it's kind of interesting, in that article they talk about him as being a Barry Goldwater with that, rattles the Republican establishment and reconnects the party with its base, but with better electoral results. Well, I certainly hope so, don't you, Greg? Better than Goldwater really does seem to be a kind of minimal bar to set for – and this is not to knock – Barry Goldwater, clearly he set the stage for Reagan, but I think we can say that, we don't – 1964 really ought not to be the game plan for the Republicans looking ahead to 2016.
You're right. There's, frustrations that folks on the right have with other folks who are likely to run in 2016. I'm not sure Obama is the model we should necessarily follow. The projection thing, a lot of people obviously have been disappointed by him, and we certainly don't want a repeat of that. I think 4 years in office is about the only thing he and Ted Cruz would have in common if Ted Cruz were to run and win in 2016. And I think Cruz has established himself on enough issues that we could be relatively comfortable with him. But the flip side of the votes that could work against you is a track record that folks can trust you on. And so that's going to be the explanation we're going to hear from folks, if there are any in this campaign coming up, that have been around longer. But Ted Cruz being a star in the Republican Party is something I'm fully comfortable with. He's going to have to prove himself, though, in the next 2 to 4 years if he wants to be the standard bearer. That's a pretty quick ascension by any standard. So on to the bad martini now. And this one actually has a tinge of good in it. Yesterday was a good martini that was mostly bad in terms of the president and his approach to Obamacare. And this is the news that, as we record here late on Wednesday morning, that is just broken. And that's that three more people have been taken into custody today, essentially for harboring the suspected Boston bombers in the aftermath of their terrorism on April 15th at the Boston Marathon. It was obviously later in the week that one was killed, one was taken into custody. But that doesn't mean in the meantime that at least a few people, it would seem here, didn't help them along the way. You can ask Dr. Samuel Mudd about that if you go back to the whole Lincoln assassination story, Jim. So we'll see what the whole story is here. But it looks like this wasn't quite as isolated as we were first led to believe.
Just breaking from CBS News' Boston affiliate, two of them are going to be charged with conspiracy to obstruct justice and making false statements. No one on the third one. Now, the names are a mouthful, Greg, and I'm going to attempt to pronounce them correctly. Azamat Tazhayakov and Dias Kadyrbayev. Shockingly enough, they are both originally from Kazakhstan and attended the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth with Zohar Tsarnaev, who, by the way, apparently this is their roommates. The third suspect is an American citizen, will be charged with making false statements. A couple interesting ramifications coming from this. First of all, everyone can get their Borat joke out of the way since these guys are from Kazakhstan. But a little bit more seriously, if there's a great wariness about whether we're doing a good job of looking through our immigrants coming to this country, there are a lot of people asking, we have these two Boston bomber brothers who, you know, basically have, you know, lived here, collected a ton of public assistance, and whose name were apparently on various terror watch lists. But apparently the watch list does not necessarily mean anyone's actually watching you. Now we have two folks who are their roommates who, thankfully, it doesn't appear were necessarily involved in the planning of any of this stuff. But it basically sounds we're helping him out afterwards in some sort of after the fact. It looks like a harboring or aiding them after the bombing. Now, you're already seeing jokes on Twitter, this is the worst roommate ever. If your roommate, I'm pretty sure if you blew up the Boston Marathon, that would be the end of our friendship and I wouldn't be doing him any favors. I think, you know, allegedly these folks removed things from the room for Tsarnaev. Very bizarre that if these guys would, you know, like suspect or have some sense of what their roommate had done and still help them out. And the fact that, you know, two of these guys are Kazakhstan foreign exchange students, I think is only going to create this, I think is an unfortunate atmosphere of suspicion about foreign students. And as we all know, the vast majority of foreign students are perfectly fine, good folks who are, you know, love America, came here to study, want to make a better life, may want to stay here, may not. But seeing a bunch of foreign students helping out the Boston bombers is not going to make Americans feel any more secure or any better about how their immigration system is working. If, you know, just by like, was there a special terrorist or interest in helping terrorists, like dorm room roommate program? At the University of Massachusetts Dartmouth, they try to clump all these types of folks together. If so, I'd really love to know who else was in this program. So very unnerving. I mean, I think a lot of people have kind of raised the point of here you have Tsarnaev who comes to America and spends most of his childhood and certainly his young adulthood in America and is going off, you know, gets a scholarship. I mean, there's all kinds of signs that this guy's on the road to having a better life in America. And so he turns around and starts blowing up the Boston Marathon. What is he being taught at this university? What is, you know, being sent, you know, what kind of values is he absorbing at this university that he would look around at his fellow Americans and say, they deserve to die? It would be over-dramatizing to say that university curriculums are turning college students into terrorists. However, I think we can now genuinely ask what's in that University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth curriculum that has now several of their students either, you know, committing bombings or being willing to help somebody who committed bombings. It's kind of some really disturbing questions. And hopefully we'll learn a little bit more in the coming days about what's going on over here, Greg.
And we'll find out if there's any more names to be added to this, whether domestically or internationally, since we're still trying to find out exactly what happened on that extensive trip that the older brother took back over to southern Russia, Dagestan, Chechnya, that whole area. So more answers still to come, hopefully, and hopefully soon. On to martini number three now, and this is certainly of the lighter fare, but interesting nonetheless. This involves the Cubs, my team. The Chicago Cubs chairman, is according to the Chicago Tribune, Tom Ricketts, for the first time threatened to move the team out of Wrigley Field if it doesn't receive government approval for more signs in the outfield, including a giant video scoreboard. I'm not sure how anyone's going to stop the signs in the outfield, but if it comes to the point that we don't have the ability to do what we need to do in our outfield, then we're going to have to consider moving, Ricketts said to the City Club of Chicago. The story goes on to say that essentially the Cubs, Rahm Emanuel, they've basically reached a framework of a deal, but the people who hate it are these people with the rooftop operations across the street from Wrigley Field whose view would be blocked by these new signs out in the outfield, which would obviously bring in a whole slew of new revenue as well as this massive new video scoreboard. They still have a manual scoreboard there, Jim. So good to see everything flowing well in Chicago and small businesses, I guess in this case a large business, not having any trouble whatsoever doing what they need to do to succeed.
Yeah, and you thought Chick-fil-A was having a hard time in Chicago. I guess that's a good point. If the Chicago Cubs are having a tough time with the regulations of the city, what chance does any smaller business have of dealing with the kind of regulatory regime? One other highlight about your one of your favorite cities. My understanding is only 20 people were shot in the city last night, Greg. Three of them fatally.
Oh, my God.
So really, we're down only a 15% fatality rate for shootings. Clearly, the city's gun control laws just you know, jump from success story to success story and all that stuff. And it's a shame because it really is a great city with some great people in it, but it is managed and governed in a terrible form. And machine politics are you know, driving businesses out of town, making life very difficult for businesses, even something as an icon like the Chicago Cubs. And now, of course, it's not a safe environment. And, you know, the decline of a once great city appears to be proceeding before our eyes. So a depressing, crazy martini thing.
Just depressing what's happened there. It's been a while since I've been to a Cubs game at Wrigley. It's a phenomenal experience. I will say, however, though, my boss here at Radio America, who's an even more devoted Cubs fan than I am, would actually like to see the Cubs leave Wrigley Field. And the point is because people will come to the game just to see Wrigley Field, and they will fill the house no matter how much they stink, and therefore there's no incentive to get good. So
he wants a less charming, large, impersonal stadium, kind of like the White Sox have on the South Side, right? One that, you know, built a few years ago and nothing really distinctive about it. Isn't that grounds for excommunication among Cubs fans?
I don't know that he wants a classless facility. He just wants the incentive to be that people will show up because the team's actually worth watching, not just for the ambiance, because otherwise the team won't have incentive to improve, although they've spent a lot of money on really bad personnel choices in the last few years. But we'll see how this one turns out.
As someone who loves the old classic stadiums, I would say that, you know, you can either make, you know, you can enjoy the charm of a Fenway or a Wrigley or I was about to say Yankee Stadium, but now there's no longer Yankee Stadium. The flip side is Nationals Park is this ludicrously state-of-the-art, you know, any more advanced and robots will be bringing beers to your seats and stuff. So I got to admit, that has its charms. But, you know, the idea of the Cubs not being in Wrigley, just kind of, you know, be the not just the end of an era, you might as well just, you know, like change the shape of the Sears Tower or something like that. You know, it just kind of, you know, it's one of those things that defines Chicago. So once icons of the city are having to rethink how they do things, it's a sign that maybe it's time to rethink some of the regulatory mindset they have in that city.
Just because in 99 years they've never won a title at Wrigley doesn't mean Wrigley's the problem.
But anybody can have a bad century.
Anybody.
You know, and, you know, as a Jet fan, that joke comes a little less funny each passing year.
Indeed. Jim, have a great one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.